Hi, and welcome to the first episode of our podcast, The Leaders Playlist. I'm joined by my co-host, Dave Clifford. Our first guest is Eric Jansen, founder of the consulting group Next Paradigm. The leadership quality we're going to be exploring today is inquisitive. Eric, tell us the story of Eric.
Hi, everyone. I'm Eric Jansen. I live in Melbourne. I founded a company 7 years ago called Next Paradigm. Next Paradigm operates in the consulting space, helping organizations to improve their ways of working. I have a family of a wife, two children, girls aged 16 and 13. We've been living here in Melbourne for all of their lives, the girls' lives, and my wife and I have lived here since 2001. Came back from living in Europe for a few years, where we worked in UK and Germany, and I've also worked in other parts of the world, including New Zealand and the US.
Awesome. Been around everywhere.
On that very point, we love traveling too as a family and as an individual. They have those quizzes sometimes on Facebook. It says name, tick all the places you've been to, and we do pretty well on that.
They're just trying to get your password from that.
Yeah. I don't actually answer them online. I just exactly right. Yes. No.
And, Eric, is there any story behind the name of the company, Next Paradigm?
There is. So the idea behind Next Paradigm is that there is a different way of doing things, and that's where I'd really try to come through with the name. It is a bit of an unfortunate name because some people can't pronounce it when when they ring up and say, "Oh, is that Eric Jansen from Next Paradigm?"
it's like an Irish name, right? It doesn't look like
anything else, right? Siobhan or something like that. Yeah, but it's trying to stimulate people to think that and realize that there are different ways of doing things, and the tried and trusted are sometimes great. But sometimes it's an impediment to actually improving the way things are done.
So today our topic is on inquisitive or being inquisitive. So we've got some questions we've prepared for you around that particular topic. What does inquisitive mean to you?
So inquisitive for me is asking the question why. There are lots of things that we do every day. Some of them we do just by habit. Some of them we do because we've been asked to do. Some of them because we've decided to make a different change and do something completely different from yesterday. But for me, being inquisitive is just asking why. It's looking at a situation or looking at a particular activity and asking yourself, wonder why that happens or why that works. I mean, I'm an engineer by education, I guess, and so I've always been one who wants to pull apart the toy and to find out what makes it run. And for that, for me, that's the inquisitive thing. It's asking the question why, trying to understand what makes something happen or why someone chose to do something, and then learning from that information.
Eric, how would you apply that to your everyday life? You said you're an engineer, so is that everything you do, you want to pull apart, or is only certain things?
Yeah, I think I'd be a pretty annoying person if I did with everything I did. But but certainly, I like to. If I think about my family's reaction to some of the things I do, they sometimes look at me and think, "Oh, who cares, Dad?" Like I might go past. Let's say we go past a factory, and then the truck comes out, and it's a beer truck, a truck full of beer. And I'd say, God, I wonder how they're making the beer in there, and how much of it gets made there, and how much of it's, is it actually made there? Is it bottled there, and all that sort of stuff? And the kids will look at me and go, who cares, Dad? I mean, it doesn't really matter. But for me, I ask those questions not because I'm necessarily that concerned about the answer, but it's just a thought process that goes through my mind. And it sometimes helps me to, I think, in a way, learn more about how things work in general. So I call it a curious mindset. I recommend one shouldn't have a curious mindset about everything because you can end up having a very cumbersome life if you do. But I think it's interesting sometimes just to explore a little bit beneath the surface of things and to work out how things might happen or how they actually came to be.
Yes, it's interesting that you kind of say we're kids because we start off like that, don't we? Kids are very, like I've got a 5-year-old and it's questions. Like he wakes up and the first question he asked me this morning was, why are black holes in space? I'm like, I don't know. Like, but as we grow older, I don't know what happens. We seem to lose that, right? We seem to lose that inquisitive, that curiosity seems to diminish. And then we stop asking questions.
I think you're right. And I think that's perhaps, again, why I'm quite an inquisitive person or have a curious mind, because I think I am sometimes a big kid. And I try to not lose that in the things that I do each day. I find it fun. It's fun, and that's why kids do it too. They're like, oh, why is this? And in fact, just a quick story here, and I think this is to highlight your point there. I saw something, I think it was on Facebook yesterday, for your younger listeners, that's the old old Instagram, and for your even younger listeners, that's the even older TikTok. But anyway, I was watching it, and it's a really moving piece where a video where it showed young kids, somewhere between, averaging between, some of them I think were literally like 1 year old and some of them up to about maybe eight. And through different medical techniques, they'd been given the gift of sight. So some of them it was, they just had blurry eyesight and they were given corrective glasses. And for others, it was actually more a medical intervention. They were actually able to see for the first time. And just the look on their face when that sensory perception came into their mind, it was just amazing. I mean, the first thing was a big smile, and then it was just like this look of pure amazement, just like, oh my God, you could just see on their face. And I think that's what I like to with a curious mindset, obviously not that dramatic, but I think with a curious mindset, if you look at things and find out about how things might work and can have that little aha moment, that can be, you know, priceless, and that can make your day.
I wonder if it's a little bit of, you know, as we've got older, we think we know everything, or we've got all those biases and whatever, and we just stop being curious, stop asking questions because we think we know everything already.
Yeah, I think you're right, Renee. And I think in some respects, particularly in Western society, we're trained to do that, right? Because people employ us for our expertise and our specialism. And so if we... to the question that David had mentioned earlier from his son, was it your son, David?
Your son, yes.
Your son, yeah, about the black holes. I mean, there's almost an imperative upon us to say, well, let's make up an answer, because we don't make it look like I don't know the answer to that. And yet the truth of the matter is you didn't know the answer, and I don't know either. I mean, I could probably have a go and start to waffle on about it, but probably I'd suggest that the better thing is to say, well, let's go and find out. Let's go and find out. How do we find, let's do some bit of research together.
Yeah, I'll just send them to YouTube. But.
Well, there you go.
But I think there's also a little bit part of that. As we go through kids, we're kind of institutionalized to see that one person has the answer, right? As kids, there's always, we're not like, I don't know about your school experience, and I think we get to that, and it's just like, don't really ask questions. That person will tell you everything, right? There's that person, expert in the room, that knows everything. So we lose it then. It's just, it becomes less and less needed. And then when the flip side is when we go into the workplace, well, there's not really that many experts there, right? And we're going to have to ask more questions. And you're probably dealing with a lot more complexity than you would in school, where you've got books and structure and all those things. And then people, you have to ask questions. It's a skill you lose, right?
Yep.
And you've got to train yourself to do that.
Yep. Yeah, that's true. And you're right, the workplace is different, because at school, and I have been a school teacher in the past too, I did that for a whole 1 year, secondary school teacher, not because I didn't like it, but moved overseas to the UK, got different jobs and different line of work. So that's another story. But certainly the difference between one of the big differences for me anyway, my experience between the work environment or the business work environment and the school teaching environment is that at school, generally the stuff has predetermined answers. Right, like I was a math teacher, physics teacher, and so even though some could argue that maths and physics continues to evolve, and there are, you know, and certainly in the physics area, there are things that if we go down to teaching Newtonian mechanics is very different from teaching particle physics, and they have different laws and different interpretations of physics. So there are different answers, but generally at each level of schooling, there are certain answers that children are expected to learn and to be tested upon. And the business environment doesn't work like that, as we all well know. They're complex environments, and things that we can bring rules of thumb, we can bring practices and patterns and so on, but at the end of the day, every situation is somewhat unique.
So when was there a time you realised that you weren't being inquisitive?
For me, I think generally speaking, it's been when I've been in work and realised it's time for a change, because I think when I've been working in roles where I haven't been, I've lost my passion for the particular work that I'm doing, I start to become less engaged, and then I don't really care enough to be inquisitive, I guess is probably the right description. So, and at that point I start to think, okay, well, metaphysical about it, like, well, what's this all about? And so that's when I probably get less inquisitive. So it's really, for me, it's a sign that I'm probably not in the right place and need to change. And that's when I've changed jobs typically in the past.
Right. So is that related to, you know, inquisitive about the situation around, or more self-reflection to go, why am I not being inquisitive?
Yeah, I think it's because, you know, you're at work for so much of your day that if the work you're doing prevents you from having the latitude to be inquisitive, well, for me anyway, I should say, that becomes quite a demotivator for me. So some people, again, we're all different personalities and different and types. And so some people, again, I'll take my example of my children, some of them, they go like, who cares, Dad? Just do it. And some people are more like that. And others are more like, well, actually, I'm more curious. I like to experiment, to learn, to try different things. And that's my nature. So when the job that I'm doing becomes too rote and too routine, that's when it sort of becomes a bit of a problem for me. And so I get out of that situation, I guess, by finding another job. Or sometimes it's actually within a company, I just find a different role or a different project if I'm in a company that gives me that latitude.
Do you find you're outnumbered when you're in organisations with your outnumbered in the sense of your level of inquisitiveness versus other people's inquisitiveness? Do you find that there's a balance there, or it's out of balance?
Well, that's a really good question, Renee, because I think I don't think it's so much about the people that I work with, but I think generally speaking, yes, at the organisations, because organisations have a natural inclination to be repetitive or systematic, so to speak. And I totally get that. I understand, you know, systems are important because they are what generates predictable outcomes. So I don't have an issue with that. But I think sometimes people get a little bit too locked into that way of thinking, and they think it's always about efficiency, rather solely efficiency, and doing things well, faster, but rather than saying, is there a better way? I think that does get lost in some of the organisations I work with. They do focus on improvement, which is important, but they see improvement as being doing what we're doing now better and faster, instead of perhaps looking at, is there a better way of doing this?
Yeah, that's true. And I've found that as well. And it's interesting that they focus on being efficient and highly productive, but they don't actually, that doesn't trigger them to think about how they could actually do it better to make it faster, to be more highly productive, and to question, you know, the value of the stuff that they're doing.
That's right. And you know, working in the IT industry, as all of us have and do, one of the big, failings I've seen in that area many, many times is where people try to automate existing processes without actually asking if the process is actually the right one. And so we actually then do even worse than, not only do we not have look at the opportunity to improve the process, but we actually bake in something that may be suboptimal, because once it's in the computing system and there's a lot of money invested in making it so, it's very costly then to try and unravel that.
So why do you think being inquisitive is important for a leader?
I think it's for two reasons. One is it's the positive one, I guess, is that it allows us to spot opportunities, because without being inquisitive, we're not asking that question, what else could we do instead, right? So if we don't ask that question, then we're probably going to miss out on some of the opportunities that are there. And that's how I've approached our business is next paradigm. I've always looked at it as saying, well, what else could we do? In fact, just the other day we were talking about this in terms of our academy and saying, are there different ways that we could approach it? Could we try this? Could we try that? And if not, what else could we look at? So it's really always about, are there opportunities there that we could uncover by just asking a few questions or doing a little bit of research? So that's the positive side, I think, that's the inquisitive nature. I think the thing that it stops a negative behavior is falling into bad patterns, because I think if we're not asking those questions, it's very easy to continue doing things and assuming that they are the right way of doing things. And that's not just processes, but even the way that we behave with people. So, you know, we may think that this style of leadership, for instance, or a particular management technique, we've been doing it for 10 years, so we'll just keep doing it. It could well be that these are actually techniques that are causing some of our team to actually to be demotivated or to feel that they're not valued or to even leave and go elsewhere. We may not even realize that. So I think, yes, again, this inquisitive nature helps us to just keep having this level of introspection or retrospectiveness that allows us to look back and learn from what we've done. And again, both sides of it, right? That learn from things that we're not doing so well to improve them, but also to really to realize we've done something that's really quite innovative or productive, and say, hey, let's take that elsewhere.
So you mentioned the people side of it there. Have you found that when you want to be inquisitive about something, people have been maybe a little bit defensive? Is there kind of a style that you use when you're being inquisitive? Is there like a certain go-to question that you have that kind of maybe brings down those defenses?
Yeah, that's a really great question. And certainly some people are much more open to, change, but even just to that conversation than others. There's certainly, I believe, a need to be empathic to different people's openness to the questioning mindset, put it that way. Because some people are defensive. I think not because they're wanting to be defensive, but just because they are not comfortable with uncertainty. That's probably the best way of describing it. And I find that the best way of dealing with that is helping put the person at ease, helping to uncover any fears that they might have about the situation. And I'm being very generic here, so let's put it in specific. Quite a lot of the work that we do can have a direct bearing on a person's own job or parts of their job. And so they can often be with good reason defensive, because it may well be that and down the track that job no longer exists. So the helping the person put that person at ease is part of that is to say, well, would you rather be, what do you feel about your job at the moment? Do you enjoy doing your job? Is it really giving you great satisfaction? And quite often it's like, well, no, I hate doing this job, but it's my job. And so then the opportunity is around the opportunity for that person. It's like, well, how could we make your job better, more engaging, more effective for you, so that you get more out of it? So that you can, you can do a better job, and the company that you're working for, quite honestly, you get better outcomes. It's about reframing sometimes. Now, that's not always possible, because let's face it, there are occasions where it really is about that job will no longer exist in the future, and then it's about that person being potentially redeployed in the organization. That's a more critical one. However, I find, again, this is my personal experience, that might have been, in fact, it was a lot of the case back in the 90s when business process reengineering and that sort of stuff. These days, I don't see that because there's a shortage of talented people in the workplace. And so if you're freed up from one job, there's every likelihood that you'll be needed in two or three other places that short-staffed at the moment anyway.
So how do you kind of gauge that level of quickness? Those people that you have and they just... they want to know something, they hit you with like 20 rapid fire questions. You haven't even got time to think about the answer to the first one. So how do you go to those levels to get that kind of depth of understanding? And is there a technique or some sort of tool that you use to go, I think I'm going a bit too far now, or I haven't gone far enough?
I'm probably going to disappoint some of the listeners here by saying, no, I don't use a tool. I just go on gut instinct. So there's no, for my experience, personal experience, there's no secret sauce to it. I try to read people and I try to understand what their level of latitude is with some of these things. So for some people, again, because I'm inquisitive by nature, someone else is, I think the danger is for the two of us, if we get engaged, is like to say, oh my God, it's 5 o'clock and what have we actually achieved? You know, we've been talking a lot about opportunities. And in fact, my wife sometimes says to me, she goes, you know, what I love about you is you're great with options, but sometimes you're not that good at actually making a decision. And that's the danger with being inquisitive. You know, you can look and dig and go on and that, and then it comes to 5 o'clock and you go, oh, geez, I actually got to make a decision here. So when people are of similar ilk, that's the danger, but the the upside. If they're not, I think it's about reading that situation and helping that person, if it's needed, because I'm not like they don't need it and we just leave it there. But if it's important that they actually consider other options, is to try and take them on a journey, I guess, and help them to understand what's in it for them, you know. And it's back to this thing about the, you know, if it's a particular job that they're doing and they're not really getting a lot of satisfaction out of it, the questions I'd start with would be, well, how could we make it better for you? How could this job be better? And again, that usually does open a floodgate, because they've usually got a lot of ideas about how it could be improved, because they've been suffering how it hasn't been improved for so many years that they've been doing the job.
So what piece of advice would you give a brand new leader developing their own inquisitiveness?
Very generally, very, very high level, I'd say find the story behind the story. Right, because so often we accept things on face value, and that's totally intuitive, right? Because and this is again part of my learning, and this is my frame of reference, if you like, is I like a lot of the stuff that when people say go back to the savannah and what are we like when before we had, you know, natural language and all sorts of stuff. Well, it's very much do or die, right? And yet a fight or flight. And so I think that's our innate reaction, our limbic brain, I think it is to say, you know, fight or flight. But now we've developed a lot more skills. We've got a prefrontal cortex. We've got a lot more ability to do that. So rather than quickly do a fight or flight decision, maybe just do a little bit of analysis and ask a few questions and then find the story behind the story. And that'll, as I said, make better decisions. So that's the first thing I'd say. In terms of a couple of things that I'd recommend people consider, one is a technique called the five whys. And the five whys is for those who don't know, it's a technique where somebody says, well, I can't do this. And you say, well, why? And says, well, because this thing happened. Well, why did that happen? And so you keep going through the five levels of questions. And quite often it leads you to the root cause of the particular problem. So I find that's a really good technique to use. Again, a quick segue here. I saw something yesterday which made me laugh, where somebody said, okay, how to really get somebody annoyed is to ask them the five whys, but ask them in rapid succession and get louder and louder. Go, why? Don't do that. That's not what I'm talking about. So that's a technique. I think it's good though, the five whys. And another thing I'd point people to is Simon Sinek's TED Talk called How Great Leaders Inspire Action. And that's a really good one. Again, it's about, it comes back to, like, we talk a lot about as leaders and particularly people who run companies, about how we do things and what we do. But the real driving behind the organization and why people join it and why people love the products is the why. And he uses Apple as a great example for that. So I'd highly recommend people, rather than me trying to describe it any further, have a look at that video, that TED Talk.
I get your point about that back in the savannah thing. It's like there's a lion in the grass. You're like, it's not really the... I got to run rather than, oh, I wonder why the line is here. And I wonder what he's thinking.
That's a good point.
Because I was saying, it's like a situational awareness of when you have to act to make a decision or be inquisitive to really quickly to a point where you have to deep dive. The story behind the story, there's also a bit around the other stories that make up that story, the different perspectives around where other people have seen. Not just the one story. This we might be multiple stories. Do you think that's true?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, one of the so I work in an organization that values the agile mindset really highly, and one of the techniques that's used in agile communities is this idea of retrospectives. So retrospective itself is great because it, you know, by definition, we retrospect, we look back on the work we've done and we look for opportunities to improve. But what's also equally important about the activity, besides just the activity itself, is the fact that it's a group activity and it asks everybody who took part in that activity to provide their own viewpoint on what was good and what wasn't so good and what happened, etc. And that's fantastic. And I find it really eye-opening whenever we do them, because different people will have quite often even diametric opinions about whether something was good or not, let alone a description of it. So I think that's important. It goes back to diversity of thought, diversity of thinking, and that can only be, I think, a good thing in terms of an input into decision-making. Now, at the end of the day, decisions are quite often binary. They're either yes or no, go, don't go, et cetera. That's the nature of decision-making. But by improving the diversity of thought and the opinions that contribute to the decision, that gives us better information in which to make better decisions. So I'm wholeheartedly behind that.
We asked you to think of a song that inspires you to be inquisitive.
So what I ended up with, and this is probably going to be, some people who listen to this podcast are probably going to have to go and Google this, but is the overture by a composer called Richard Wagner. So it's overture from Tannhäuser. And I love it because for me, the first time I heard it, just to get into the story, so the first time I heard it was I was actually attending the opera, Tannhäuser, at the what was then the East Berlin State Opera. So this is before the Berlin Wall came down, because some of your listeners have clue on how old I am. Not long before it came down, I should add, but before it came down, back in 1989, it came down. And so for me, it's quite a dramatic overture, and it plays to just all the different instruments. And like, I'm not a musician, and I played piano when I was a kid for about 3-4 years, but that's about my only experience in there. But for me, it was like in the children who first got to see for the first time. For me, it was just like, it just opened up so many of my senses. And it said, like, here's somebody who's playing with this instrument, then another one, and then it's like dramatic, and then it's very quiet. And so even though it's an opera, this overture is, it's only music. There's no singing. And so for me, it just said to me, wow, there's just another world out there that I've never even experienced. And so that the experience itself is great, but then also it just reminds me whenever I hear it about opportunity and things that I forget to think about. So yeah, it's a great one. So 15 minutes long, I think, or something like that. So stick with it, guys. If you do go have a listen to it, but I do recommend it. Yeah.
Yeah, well, you're going back in time now, you know what I mean? Some millennials are going to go, what, there was in East Germany?
Yeah, and that's another story too, the experience
Classical music. I'm interested, is it something that you say, I need to get deep into thought about something, let's take on Wagner in the background, or is it just when you hear that song, you just go, oh, it triggers these memories of maybe, yes, that's when it pays to be inquisitive and seeing things for the first time? And
yeah, it's probably the latter. It's probably when I listen, think of that music, it reminds me of just how rich the world is. You know, we often just see the veneer of the world. We just see the bit that we see because we have to. You know, you can't take in everything every minute of the day. I mean, your mind would explode. But it just reminds me that there's just such, the world is really rich. It's really rich in terms of its variety and capabilities of individual people and things that we just don't even think about on a day-to-day basis. I mean, a great example here, just for people who are drivers, you could drive down a certain road and certain path maybe 100, maybe 1,000 times, and, you know, that's all great. And then you go, and for some reason you're in the passenger seat because someone's taking you down that road, and you just drive down that road and you look inside and you go, I never realised that building was there. You know, oh, that's really interesting, you know. You just never see it because you've got your head straight ahead, and you look at the road and you're looking at other things, which you have to do. You're looking for cars coming from left and right and all sort of stuff. But when you're in the passenger seat, you have a different view. And I think this is the thing that this opens up for me. It's just like putting yourself in a different position just for a period of time can suddenly open your eyes to things that were right in front of your face all the time, but you just never saw them.
Renee, have you got some?
As you were talking, Eric, I have the same. That's what I love about music, is that it takes you away, and every time you listen to it, you hear something different or it means something different. And it depends on, you know, how your day's been. But I don't know, 5 years ago, my husband dragged me along to see Hans Zimmer in concert. And he's the, you know, if you don't know him, the famous guy who does all the music for, he started with Gladiator, or didn't start with Gladiator, but Gladiator is one of them. And he does the Spider-Man movies and all the Pirates of the Caribbean and all of those sorts of ones. And Lion King.
Right.
We were sitting there and he started playing the song, and I hadn't seen, it's from Spider-Man 2, I think, and I hadn't seen that movie or heard the music. And this song played, and oh my God, like, talk about goosebumps. And I was just blown away. I couldn't believe it. And then so much so we went and saw him when he came back a couple of years later, and we had front row tickets, and this song started. It was the same concert a couple of years later, and same set list. And he started playing it. And, oh my God. And Ben and I are in the front row, and we're like going like this. And he looked around and he saw us and he's pointing at us. And oh my God. I think it was, for me, it was I just didn't know that that was coming. And it's like, if that's what's happened, then what the hell is he going to pull out next?
Yeah.
What's the next thing he's going to do? So yeah, that was mine. Dave, what's
people who can't see the video of Renee was headbanging there for a
We were headbanging to Hans Zimmer. It was so cool.
Yeah. My song is, I'm going to go with a classic tune, Imagine by John Lennon.
Mm.
But I think that's the imagination, right? And Kira's going, imagine if this was true, what could you do? Being inquisitive like that. And that's what I like to do with teams. You'd always see these blockers and I go, imagine if that wasn't there. What's the smallest thing you can do to move forward? Well, imagine what that would be like. And think, just trying to get them to think outside. Music is a big part of that, that adaption, to look at things in a different way. And that's a good, to me, that's when I look at inquisitive. I like to look at things a different way. I'm not an engineer mindset. I'm more like social engineer, if I was to say anything. I like looking at people and go, what is making him tick? Why is he acting that way?
Yeah.
And that's kind of where my go-to is. That's when I sit back and I'm really like a observer of humans in their habitat. I think kind of David Attenborough or whatever. Just like makes you go, why is he acting that way? Why would he say that?
So we're out of time. But before we finish, I'm going to hit you with 5 fast questions. Which book are you reading at the moment?
So I'm reading a book called The Rational Optimist by an author by the name of Matt Ridley. So Matt Ridley is actually a biologist, but he wrote a book more in the frame of an economist back in 10 years ago, about 2011. And it's around some of the things that we think are happening in the world and we think are terrible, which he suggests actually are probably not as bad as you actually think they are. So he's putting an optimist lens on the way things are.
What's your favourite smell?
I found this one hard to think about. Freshly pressed coffee, probably. That or a really good aged red wine.
As a kid, what was your favourite toy?
A bike. My bike was good because I could go anywhere I wanted to go.
What TV show are you binging at the moment?
It's called Halt and Catch Fire. And it's a fictional TV series, but it's loosely based on the story of Compaq and how they took on IBM as a clone PCs and turned into one of the, I think it was the fastest growing Fortune 500 company at the time and possibly ever.
Final question. The end of the world is coming. What is the very last thing you do?
I think it'd be hard to guess because who knows what we'd do in that situation, but I'd like to think I'd get together with my family and my friends, get our favourite drinks, sit around and just have a bit of a laugh because, what else is there to do anyway?
Very true. Thank you for your time. Thanks for sharing your insights and your stories.
Well, thank you very much. Really enjoyed talking to you guys.